There. Well, hi, everybody. My name is Carol. I'm an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm sober today only by the grace of God, which the living grace of God, which is you people, and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, our blessed 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. And I want to first thank the Blue Ridge Speaker Group meeting for inviting me, especially Lynn and Billy. Let's see. Let me see, where do I go from here? I gotta let you know that I'm not an authority on Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't really I am a student of this program. I don't know that much about AA. I don't know that much about alcoholism, and I don't know that much about you. I don't even know that much about me. I'm still learning about me, and that's because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm able to do that. But I'm still learning, and I hope I always will learn. Let me see. I wanted to say we share our stories in a general way, what it used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. So I do not need to give you a blow-by-blow account of my drinking. You really don't want to hear that, and I really don't want to tell that. So I won't do that. My purpose is hopefully that I am able to share a message that you can identify with, though. So it needs to be done in a very general manner. So I want to I always kind of go through my family history. I don't know it any way else to start it. If you want to get to know me, you got to hear about my, because I blamed them throughout my whole life. So I mean, I might as well let you know my family. I had a mom, a dad, a brother Mike, and a sister Eva. And mom was almost totally deaf. She wore hearing aids at the end of her life because they couldn't afford them otherwise. So I always said it made it hard for us to communicate with one another, but I wasn't communicating with too many people at the time anyway. And then my father was. Basically, he drank every single day from the time he was about 9 years old. And he died at the age of 59. So, directly caused by alcoholism. I had a brother that went fishing with a neighbor boy, and they just guessed that maybe they tried to mend the boat on the shoreline. Whatever they did, they never came back home. They drug that lake and they found out that they had both passed. And you know, for a normal family, that would probably, be it'd be horrible anyway, but at least they would be comforting each other and consoling each other. But when you're living in a home that's filled with alcoholism, it's not like that. We kind of thought our we just basically thought of our own self, I guess, individually. I had also a sister. Her name was Eva. She was a little over 4 years younger than I. She was born Down syndrome, and I used to be very embarrassed by her actions and the way she talked and how she carried herself. And I was always angry because I was the one that had to take her to the movies and the park and do things with her. And I babysat her a lot. And so I was always angry at my family for that. And that was just a sick thing that I had going on. But I absolutely adored her when I got sober. I absolutely adored my sister, and she adored me. She adored me throughout that whole fiasco, actually. And none of them are here today. I am truly an orphan, I guess, because I don't have any real family members except my husband and our family that we have together now. So, and, you know, I used to say that had a lot to do with my drinking, but it really doesn't have anything to do with alcoholism, none whatsoever. Because I had this obsession and an allergy, and that's the way it was. I had that whether they were there or not, if that was happening in my life or not. I never felt a part of anything really, though. I felt always kind of a little off. I always felt like I was not quite as good enough. I had a lot of the not enough stuff. I wasn't pretty enough. I know I wasn't good enough. I wasn't smart enough. I wasn't skinny enough. I wasn't rich enough. I had it all. That's the way I lived. And nobody taught me that. And I just felt that. And I don't know why I felt that, but I always felt that. And then I had another habit. I used to run away from home a lot. I was 9 years old the first time I ran away from home. And I made myself a sandwich, took a blanket and a pillow and a quarter. And we lived next to a baseball field. So I went over to the dugout. I was going to sleep there for the night and then take off in the morning. That's what I was going to do. But it got dark and my brother came over and says, "Ma says you got to come home." So that was the end of that. That was my first time I ran away from home. But I made a habit of running away from home. And I did that a lot. In fact, I did that so much that before I was 18 years of age, I was sitting in holding cells 5 times. I was in jail cells simply trying to get me back from A to B, back home again. And I tried to quit school. I was 15 years old. In the state of Minnesota, you don't quit school at the age of 15. It's illegal, but I just refused to go. They didn't know what to do with me. And then I ran away from home so much. The last time I ran away, I got in front of a judge. And there were other incidents that were along with that. And he basically told me I either got to go to a girls' reformatory, which was Sauk Center in Minnesota, or go to the Job Corps Center. And I didn't think I was a bad kid. I just didn't want to go home. And so I chose to go to the Job Corps Center. And there I got, I was taught a skill, I guess, somewhat. And I was fine until I met up with a lot of the people that were drinking just like I do. And then I was back at it again. So I was fine until I got back with the same, my people, I guess. I did do a lot of the courses in the Job Corps Center, and I loved what I did until I started drinking. And of course, I ran away again, but this time I ran to home instead of away from home. And I did pass those courses and they sent me my certificate. I had 2 weeks left and I left. So, and I didn't know what I was going to do. At one time, I was just going to party. That's all I was going to do. And I'm still just underaged and coming in whenever I wanted to and going out and drinking and all that kind of stuff. And my father basically just said, either going to go back to school or get a job or something, but you're not going to do this anymore. And so that's what I did. I went back to school. I tried it again. And again, I quit school. And by this time I'm dating a boy and we got pregnant and we had to wait for him to turn 17 so we could cross the state line and get married. And we set up a house over in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And then my daughter was born. My daughter was born on December 26th, 1969, and the most absolutely beautiful child I'd ever seen in my life. I fell in love with her instantly, and I would have done anything for her, except I'm an alcoholic, so that wasn't going to happen. Well, we tried to make a go of it, and I left my first husband and went and moved back by my mom and dad, August of 1973, and that was a few months before my father was to die. My father died on February 74, and that was another thing. And, you know, I would have had difficulty with it anyway if he passed away. But because I'm an alcoholic, it was a lot harder. It was just a lot harder for me. So then, what did I do? I had my drinking stages too. I had blackouts and I'd get the shakes and, then you drink some more, you know, that's how you take care of the shakes. All this time I was able to convince myself that I was okay. My first husband wanted to try again, and so he moved back up north here. We moved into a trailer 5 miles out of town, and all this time I was thinking, well, it's going to be different this time. It's going to be better this time, but I never stopped drinking, so it wasn't going to be any better. He couldn't stand it anymore because he was hearing from everybody. Once I put alcohol into my system, that was it. I was done. I would try to hide myself away in the trailer for a while, thinking that things would get better and people would start talking to me again and all that kind of stuff, but that didn't happen. And I would try the different kinds of things, like going to uptown a little later in the day, not taking so much money with me, only drinking beer, you know, and staying away from all the hard stuff. And I would try all those things, and I wasn't getting very far. It was always when I put alcohol into my system, I wasn't going to quit until I was done with that bout, whatever that took. And my first husband couldn't stand it anymore, so he asked me to leave. And at this time, I didn't know what to do, so I went over to my mother. And, you know, my mom had some Al-Anon previous to this with my father when my father was trying to go to AA. And I told her the truth. I told her that I think it had something to do with my drinking, as if it would be a big surprise to her, and it really wasn't a big surprise at all. She happened to have a couple AA telephone numbers there just hanging around the house. And she asked me to call one of these people. And I did. I called this man named Bill because I was desperate to get back in that house. And Bill told me to, he lived 5 miles away, and he asked me to come to his house today. And that there was a meeting going to take place in a little while. He would talk to me, and then we'd go to the meeting together. And I said, okay, I agreed to do that. And I went to his house, and I was in such a state, I hardly remember anything that he said. I know he tried to 12-step me, but I don't remember it. And then when it came time to leave, he says, my wife will bring you, show you how to get to the meeting, because she's going to the Al-Anon meeting upstairs, and I'll come a little later. And he says, but if you're thirsty, this is the one thing I remembered. If you're thirsty, I have two bottles up in the cupboard. And if you're thirsty, I'll give you one of the bottles. One of them has a drink and one of them has poison in it. And I won't let you know which one I give you. And I thought that was the strangest thing to say to a person. But anyway, so I get over there and I asked her, is there women at the meeting? Because that was extremely important to me. And she says, oh, yeah, there's all kinds of ladies in there. And I get in there and there's one woman in there. So I sit next to her, and I knew that Al-Anons will say anything just to get you in the doors of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous after that. And I sat by her, and a guy that I drank with briefly, he came and sat by me, and across the table was the man that tried to work with my father. And I don't remember much of that meeting either, except the guy, this one gentleman was saying that his wife left with a truck driver. And to this day, every time he hears a truck go by, he's afraid he's bringing her back. And that's all I remember from that. So, and the only other thing is this lady took me aside and handed and told me where the meetings were located. And she pointed out a women's group that was a small group. And so I went to that one. I went to I knew I had to go to a women's meeting. And I got in there and I sat down with these ladies and I thought, well, they're not anything like the people I drank with. So I didn't feel comfortable there either. And then someone took me aside from that and said, right over there in Hoyt Lakes, 5 miles from my home, there's a little 12x12 group. Why don't you go to that? And I went to that, and it is smaller. And they read out of this book called 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. And I thought, well, I'd feel comfortable there, but I didn't feel comfortable there either. They seem like different people than I'm used to. It didn't occur to me that I was going to be uncomfortable wherever I was, because I'm uncomfortable when I'm not drinking. So that's the way that was. But I kept going to the women's meeting, and I kept going to the 12x12 meeting, and I'm taking all these names and phone numbers and putting them in my purse. And every time it was my turn to talk, I says, my name is Carol, I'm an alcoholic, and I pass. And I did that for a little over eight months, almost 9 months. But I was getting thirstier and thirstier. I got a job as a waitress in our small community. And I was thinking of drinking all the time. I'd get my daughter in the car and we'd drive around, and I'd look in my rearview mirror and I felt like people were following me. I was going absolutely nuts. And I know that it's, you know, there's these avenues that we can go when if we're alcoholic. We can die, we can sober up, or we can go absolutely crazy. And I think that's where I was headed for. I was used to living on alcohol and not being sober without a program at all. And I didn't identify with a lot of stuff that was being said because I wasn't listening to a lot of what was being said. I was too caught up in Carol and how do I look and how do I sound and how do I act? And, you know, it's all about me. And then finally I just picked a fight with my boss. I dumped my daughter over at my mother's house. And I went over to a small bar that didn't have very many people there. And I ordered a drink. And then I called somebody to make sure I had a place to be when I was drinking. And I proceeded to drink. And that drunk was about two plus days. And my first husband found me. My ex-husband found me. And he said, somebody had tried to call you from AA at your mother's house. And I didn't know who it was. And the only person I was listening to at that time was this gentleman named Scott. And I don't know why. I think it was because I was identifying with what he was saying. Other people just smile at that. But I think I was really identifying with what he was saying. And so I went back to the meetings because of that, because I didn't know where else to go. And I went there, and this time they were on the first step, and we started reading the 12x12. and it was my turn to read, and I lost my place while I was reading. And when it was my turn to talk, I finally talked. I said, I drank. I don't know why I drank. I don't know. I think maybe I need to pick up a few more extra meetings. That's all I knew. I didn't know anything else. And Scott was having problems at that time, and he asked me to come with him to meetings, and we went to 28 meetings in 30 days. And I needed every single one of them. And then I was 15 days dry, and we went to Winnipeg, Canada, and we listened to all these circuit speakers, and I had never heard such beautiful messages and identified with everything they were saying. I was just in seventh heaven, and but still uncomfortable. But I knew that there was a program out there now. I knew that there was something to do that I needed to do. And I tried to get a sponsor a couple times, and I wasn't able to get one. And then so I was just kind of willy-nillying it. I did that for a year and 8 months without a sponsor. And I was trying to do the steps. I was really trying to do the steps the best I could. You know, I had a problem with this power, this higher power. And I was listening to you people talk, and you had me. I mean, I identified with what you were saying, and I knew that I was one of you. I just knew that I was an alcoholic. I just didn't know what to do about that. And then you guys would share about how you would take the steps and put them in your life. And that's what I tried to do. And I tried to do it on my own. So I did my own third step. I did my own fourth step. I went to a priest to listen to my fifth step. And I did, that priest heard, I think, four of my fifth steps. And then I would do this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, ding, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, ding, and make an occasional apology, not an amend, an apology to my family. And that's all the further I could get. And then I was getting into trouble, and Scott was working with some guy, and he was working with this guy named Pat, and I was watching this, and I was watching both of them, because they seemed to change as they were working with one another. And I missed that. And I know that was something I needed. I had problems with ladies. I had problems with men. I had problems with everybody, but I mean, mainly I wasn't able to build a relationship with another lady. And so I had difficulty trying to find a sponsor that way. But this gal, this little short Finnish gal, she was everywhere I went. And I was going to assemblies. I was going to workshops. I was going to all kinds of roundups by this time. I was doing everything. And she was there like a shadow. I called her up one day, and I said, can you listen to my fifth step? I'm doing another fifth step. Could you listen to it? She said, sure, I'll jot down a few things too. And just briefly, I thought I was helping her, just briefly, you know, and I'd get in there, and we did a third step prayer together. And then I proceed to tell her all this litany of my life up to that point. And then she proceeds to show me how she has this resentment, this cause, and this effect. And I said, geez, that's nice. Where'd you get that? You know, I had never really saw it in action before. And she was showing me how to do the program. And after everything was said and done, I realized that I needed her for my sponsor. And I asked her to be my sponsor. And Sandy was my sponsor for 41 years of my sobriety. And I'm very grateful for her, and I absolutely love her, and I miss her. But things happened in later in our sobriety. I mean, we had wonderful AA. We were all over the place. Scott and I were AA buddies, and we just did everything together. And it was wonderful. It was fantastic. And I got work, went to school, and got my degree, and I started working, and Scott was working, and we were doing all kinds of stuff. And things were just not real. I mean, I had a tough sponsor. She was very aggressive, and she was very outspoken, and that was fine. It's just that she kept getting worse. It was not pleasant, and I knew that I was doing okay. So I knew that there was something that was wrong with Sandy, and I don't want to blame anything on Sandy, but I know that I needed someone else to talk to. And at this time, it was March 2020. And I couldn't handle it anymore. And things were happening in my life. And I was falling apart. And I had been working Carol's program again instead of turning my will and life over and letting God direct it. It was all about Carol again. And I'd been doing that for quite a while. But by March of 2020 was when I was falling, really fell apart. And I thought, well, I'm going to leave you guys. I'm getting out of here. I'm not going to stay here anymore. I'm leaving. And everything closed. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't do anything. And then we're sitting there on the phone. I hadn't been to a meeting for almost 2 weeks, and that's a long time for Carol. And I'm on the looking at this phone, and how you push this little blue button, and then you can get onto one of these Zoom meetings. And I got onto this meeting from Columbus, Ohio, and this wonderful person that I'd heard many times before started giving a story, and I thought, oh my God. And I can have this all the time, you know, and I loved it. And it was just like I was back where I needed to be. Not only was I stale, but our whole home group was stale. I mean, we weren't growing. We could tell each other stories, and it was monotonous. It wasn't growth. It wasn't enthusiasm. And I needed that. I really needed that. And I was grateful for the pandemic. I hate to say that to people, but I was, because I could sit. And along with that, also, I lost my hearing, and that played a big role in me hearing messages and that needed to be dispensed to me. I needed to hear other people share their experience, strength, and hope. And I got really off the beam. I was cupping my ear at meetings like that just to try to hear what was going on, and I wasn't hearing anything. And this guy finally came up to me, and he gave me his old hearing aids, and I had them adjusted at an audiologist's, and so I he brought me back into the world of hearing again. And but so much had gone down by that time. I quit sponsoring all the gals I was sponsoring. I gave them up. Some of them wouldn't give up on me. They wouldn't leave me. And then some of them started coming back again when I was getting better, but some of them never came back. But I was grateful for that as well. They needed to live whatever journey they're on. They needed to do whatever they needed to do. But so I'm listening to all these meetings, and I'm starting to get back to the old Carol when I was brand new. I felt like I was brand new again in 2020, and I had 41 years of sobriety at that time. I felt like I was brand new. I was hearing all these messages, identifying with everything, and it was very exciting for me. But when it brought in so much needed things that were happening. You know, I always, when I was brand new in the beginning of AA, I didn't really believe I was an alcoholic. I thought I was a heavy social drinker, whatever in the world that was, but that's what I thought it was. But It says here on page 21, he may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his liquor or his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of liquor once he starts to drink. And that was me. I take the obsession was always there. Once I took a drink, I wasn't going to quit until I was done with that bout. And I could quit, but I had to start again. I always had to start again. And then it said, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience could conquer. So that meant to me that I was truly beyond human aid. Nobody in the world could fix that for me. And I was powerless. So I needed something. I needed a power, something. And I listened to you people around the tables, and you became my higher power when I was brand new. That's the group was my higher power. And I just slowly but surely kept doing the deal and found out that I have started to pray and had a relationship with this power of my very own power. And I'm so grateful to have that today. It is the most important part of my whole life, is having this power in my life. It allows me to have you in my life, because I am not any good on my own. I don't build relationships very well. And so I started working these steps with Sandy. I started working these steps, and I got to the ninth step, and I got some of the basics of what to do. But that 10th, 11th, and 12th was still kind of a hit and miss for me. And March of 2020 brought that all together for me, so that I could have a daily reprieve each day. And it was so wonderful. So Scott and I, we do our morning meditation together, and we do our evening meditation. And we always start out with, we pray this morning in meditation that you show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. And we use the word understand as well. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. It doesn't just come. That we have to put ourselves into that. And my inventory is so important to me today, to spot check myself when I'm not feeling comfortable and with people. Last Thursday is a prime example of that. We're at one of our home group meetings. And one of the gals was talking about how she wasn't feeling quite right. She was uncomfortable, coughing. She thought maybe she had an allergy. And just jokingly, I moved my chair over, you know, to just kind of tease her. She moved her chair over. And I could tell by the look on her face that she was angry, that she was upset. And that's because of doing this deal enough to get a sense of another human being in my life and what they're going through. And so when I had a moment, I asked her if she was uncomfortable for what I said. And I was sorry, that was supposed to be a joke. It wasn't meant to be anything but a joke. And right away, it clears it up right away. That's those spot check things that I have to do, because I have to be more aware of those people around me in my life in order to be useful. It helps wonders with 12-step work. It really helps wonders to see how a person is really feeling just by their actions and the way they look and things like that. I was too consumed with self before to see any of that. But today I see that better, and I'm so grateful for that. And it's also being directed by this power, Because, you know, like before this meeting, before I ever talk, I get really uncomfortable. And I do the prayers, Scott, and I always do a third step prayer and talk to God before one of us talks. And I was just on a meeting with a gal. We're going through the 12 by 12 right now, and we're doing the 10th step. And I mean, but I get those things help me relax a little bit, but still I have to allow this power in order for it to work. So, and I'm very grateful that I'm able to have that little bit because I know it's going to be bigger later, you know, but I got that little bit coming. It is a daily reprieve. That's all we have is today. We don't have tomorrow. You know, yesterday we got to clean it up. My first sponsor always said, clean it up. I got another sponsor, by the way. I got her right away when I was really having problems. And immediately we went through the book together. And I'm so grateful that she's my sponsor. And she's a very kind, soft-spoken lady and just the most honest person I've ever met. And I'm very grateful to have her in my life too. And where are we at? So, I you know the prayer life is we read a lot of different kinds of books, and we go outside of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got really involved in reading just swallowing and digesting Sam Shoemaker books. I absolutely loved all anything that he wrote. I've never met saw one of them books that I read that I didn't like. I mean, it was wonderful. And it's the principles of our program. I identify it as the principles with our program. That's how I identify it with. And there's so many other books. I'm lucky because Scott, my husband, it was an archivist for our area for 10 years. And so he's brought in these wonderful pieces of literature. And he read them when he brought them in. And this was back in 1984 or something like that. Maybe before then, I don't remember. But anyway, so and I started reading them just the last probably decade, the last decade, I think I started reading it. But so I'm madly in love with enhancing my spiritual growth. I wanted seek that out. And I think that's what the 11th step is all about. We try to seek this power in our life. And what better way to do that with as with another human being? I read the AA Comes of Age book with a gal. I read the 12 by 12 with a gal. And my sponsor and I are reading Sermon on the Mount, and it's absolutely wonderful. We only take like 4 or 5 pages at a time, and we read them personally, and then we write down what we're reading, and then we get together and we talk about it. And everything is all, and it is for her too. It identifies with the AA program. It's just more of an awareness of, what a beautiful life we have. We really have a wonderful life. I've been given everything, really. I mean, you know, when my mother passed away, it was probably the most painful experience I had, drunk or sober, but it was the most gratifying experience of my entire life because I was capable of being useful to her. And she really got me into Alcoholics Anonymous, actually. She did it in a kind way, though. She never even told me I was an alcoholic. She says, "Why don't you call one of these people?" That's all she said. She never told me I was an alcoholic. And I was very grateful to be useful to her. And then my sister got sick. And I think I got a little sick when she got sick. That's what happened. I got really sad. And I tried to fight the staff where she was living and all that other kind of stuff, you know. But with the inventory, I'd one time, I one night, I was I woke up from from sleep, and I was having a message come to me about be kind to those people that work with Eva. And I know where that came from. That's what it was about. I was being angry all the time because I'm trying to stop this illness, and I can't stop this illness. She's going through her journey. I have to accept her illness. And that's what it's all about. And I'm just very grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for giving me those insights, because, I mean, those are things that I used to drink over all the time. It was miserable. And I'm very grateful to be a part of that. When I was first in March of 2020, when I got, I went through a deep depression and everything. And one of the things I came out of there was I remembered something I forgot to tell my daughter in an amend. And so when we went to visit her the next time, I went to her house. It was about when I used to call the local liquor store and get bottles brought to me because I did not drive. And my first husband was at work. And so I'd be passed out by the time he gets home. And my daughter would be sleeping or in the crib or whatever it was. And I never even got her up out of the bed, out of her crib. But when she got old enough to walk and everything, she was there. And I passed out on the couch. And she, I woke up and she wasn't there. And I didn't know where in the world she went. And we're on three flights up. And I had to go down, and I could go to the back door or the front door. I didn't know which. So I went to the back door because I figured she used to get babysat by somebody that lived in the alley by that door. And so I went there and I called and called. And I walked two blocks before I finally saw this little speck of a thing in the middle of the sidewalk. And I went to her and she's crying and just sobbing those kind of cries. And I thought, oh my God. And you'd think that that would stop a person like me from drinking. But most of you know that it won't stop you from drinking. But I went to my daughter to make amends for that. And she wouldn't even let me get it all out. She said, Mom, you are a good mother. She wouldn't even let me get it all out because of you people have changed me in her. So I'm so grateful for this program, and I'm so grateful for all of you. And I think that's all I got to say. Thank you.